Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey, everybody. It is Weird Islanders, the podcast, back again after a short and unwanted and unexpected hiatus. Won't say anything more than that. You all know what I'm talking about. But we're here to talk about some other older Islanders. And joining me once again via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. Mike, what's going on?
Not too much. This is going to be a banger.
Yeah. It's a couple of your favorites in this one.
Yeah. So don't know how... what the time limit is here, but it could be another, you know, we just did what, an hour and whatever on Islander Anxiety, and this one could be 4 or 5 hours. It's going to be a college lecture style, yeah. You know, course. It's one of those like 3 hour courses.
Yeah. This is going to be the Great Courses Plus on Weird Islanders.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about this too. And we got some great Islanders, but we also have an extra special great guest. He is the co-host of the Through the Island podcast, which I recommend everybody listen to. And he's always got great opinions, and he's just an all-around sharp guy. His name is Desmond Santua. Desmond, how are you?
I'm good. I'm great. I want to just correct the record here a bit. I'm the primary host of Through the Island podcast. Mike is the co-host. He's been demoted since the inception of the pod. Host, capital H host, me, Mike, co-host, and, you know, all lowercase letters, including his name. But Through the Island podcast, we are simultaneously the most progressive and unproductive Islanders podcast in the IPU, the Islanders podcast universe.
That's pretty cool.
Proud of it.
I mean, that's your thing. Like, you guys are great at it. One of the things I love about the podcast is that you and your co-host Mike have a very different relationship than me and my friend and co-host Mike. He didn't take the Devon Taves trade well. I know a lot of us didn't, but he really seem to have kind of gone off the deep end as far as after that trade happened.
Well, he gets to enjoy it as an Avalanche fan, because he's, you know, another reason why he cannot ever get to rise to the level of host is his loyalty is uncertain. at all times. And as such, I want everybody to make sure to check out the podcast, but don't respect Mike at all.
That seems like a pretty fair, trade there. So you guys are obviously named after like a great Barry Trotz quote. How are you taking the news now that Barry Trotz is no longer the Islanders coach?
Well, with our episode, as all the other pods in the IPU, was very emotional. Mike very much tried to put his positive that the sky isn't falling spin on it, while also being bummed and thinking that it should not have happened. As time has gone on, I mean, I still think it sucks. I got asked, well, the comparison that we made is that it's for any 2004 RMB heads out there. I know there's plenty in the Islanders fan base. it's like from the Usher Confessions Part 2 music video where he finds out that his woman on the side is pregnant, very shocked. That was the shock that I had personally. But as time's gone on, I feel that we can't undo this. And the fact that Lane Lambert is here, it's the best of the options that could have happened. I still just feel, so weird still. Like it's almost feels like I'm still putting the pieces together as to what the hell happened here. Because if the parts of the narrative of this where there were issues all along, I don't understand why Trotz got to have such a hand in the construction of the roster up to this point. If they had a seemingly fraying relationship over time, I'm just, every time I think it makes sense, there's something about it that doesn't.
I think the worst part is we'll never actually know the full truth because Lou Lamoriello never speaks and Barry Trotz is too nice to say what happens.
we got to go to Winnipeg. Our pod has our fingers crossed for Winnipeg. Yeah. Barry gets to go home and then we get to go to Winnipeg. We get to just see that city for all it's worth and really just, maybe yell Barry for the entirety of the game. I just want to see his large skull in person one more time.
It would be a good, Islanders fan trip. Just take over,
right?
Whatever that place, True North Center, for Islanders and Jets, which is always on New Year's Eve for some reason.
Yeah, that's true.
But we can listen to that or play that Weaker Than song too.
Oh, yes, baby. Yeah. Now we're talking my language.
Well, we're definitely going to talk Mike's language because we're going to get into some weird Islanders. And this is, again, a sort of a multi-Islander podcast. But I'm really glad you picked this one. I was hoping we would get to it soon, and you went right for it. So as our special guest, Desmond Zantua, will you please reveal the topic of today's Weird Islanders, the podcast?
So we have a little bit of a multiverse of madness, so to speak, going on. The topic is Weird Islanders, Reluctant Euros.
Yes, yes, the Reluctant Euros. And I know that anybody that's followed Lighthouse Hockey for a long time will know more or less who we're talking about in this episode. We got five all together, and it's a great group because we've got two guys that probably didn't want to come and didn't stay for very long. Two guys that most definitely didn't want to come ended up staying for quite a while and became fan favorites and cult heroes. And one guy who didn't want to stay so much that he never even took the general manager's money and just took off as fast as he could because he was not part of the program. So let us begin with the first member of the Reluctant Euros group. And Desmond, will you please reveal who that is?
Alexander Karpatsev.
Defenseman Alexander Karpatsev, originally from Russia, played with the Rangers as a rookie on their 94 Cup team. Before we get any further, I just want to say that Karpatsev perished in the locomotive air disaster a number of years ago. And we don't talk about this as if to slander the man, but he was a member of the group of Weird Islanders for sure. And everything about his very, very short tenure with the Islanders was weird. And, you know, I think he's it's worth talking about here. So what, you know, what about Karpatsev stood out to you, Desmond, as far as like this group goes?
I mean, I said a little before we started recording, I'm shocked that he even made it to three games played. I was like, I could have sworn, because I remember, I'm not sure if I want to, you know, get to the good part too early, but the Pat Foley rant, the Blackhawks broadcaster that absolutely just destroyed him.
Saying he's a good defenseman when he plays, and there's the rub, because Alexander Karpatsev looks for any reason not to play, and in his time in Chicago, he is the worst excuse for a teammate I've ever seen in over two decades doing this job. A couple of examples: 10 minutes before a warm-up a few weeks ago, my shoulder hurts, and a young fella, young defenseman who wasn't anticipating playing, had to scurry into his uniform and dress for the game. He was coming back from an ankle injury earlier this season, almost ready to rejoin the lab, has a collision in practice.
I have a concussion.
Well, Dr. Karpatsev always had an excuse, always found a way to milk the system.
I remember that and thinking, wow, that was, I mean, that's 2004, so the internet barely, as we know it, barely exists. So to say that it went viral, but maybe it was on, I'm not sure, HF boards? Was HF boards the thing back then?
Definitely.
I just remember seeing...
Or like MikeMusko.com.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
There was some proto Islander...
The message board, the chat room is for sure, yeah.
Yes. It was one of the early stages. That link popping up and feeling like, wow, that was harsh. And then instantly, So he plays more than one game. I swear to you, I thought he played one period. Maybe I only saw one. Maybe I missed the first two games, and or I only saw him play one game in which he got hurt in the first period. But it was just he sticks out as barely like the harshness, and then him not being there, and I guess just that overall. It's almost in retrospect of, oh yeah, that guy was on the team. What was there about that? Oh yeah, that rant. And then in general, you know, Weird Islanders, that team is a Weird Islanders team.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure.
Reading the article, Steve Sterling, I forgot that man existed.
We never forget.
And so does the rest of the NHL. I think that if you asked everyone in the, you know, who pays hard attention to the NHL, if it said, can you name the Islanders coaches since 2000, like when from Laviolette to Lambert, no one outside of very, very screwed up Islander fans would remember Steve Sterling was a head coach of this team. And Bradshaw. Yes. Who's still in the league?
He's still.
I think he's like a head coaching candidate. He's on the short list that you read for all these vacancies.
I had a coworker at the AP that was really upset that Shaw didn't get the job, because I think Shaw, because he was in between Laviolette and Sterling, right? And then the next year they hired Sterling, right? So
it was Laviolette, Sterling got fired.
Shaw.
Then it was Shaw. No. And then it was
he was upset that Shaw got canned that year.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess Bradshaw coaching the Robert Nilsson Islanders to 5 points of the Atlanta Thrashers really was deserving of a better look, I guess.
He was one of the few Islanders fans there. You'd think the AP would have more Islanders fans, but no, it was really just a handful of us. And that was his guy. So Karpatsev was a defenseman, and the story in the post that I'll link here in the article, it talks about Karpatsev gives Isles blue line help. Well, that's kind of not really what happened. Mike Milbury actually had some nice things to say about somebody else for a change. We're glad to get somebody with Karpatsev's ability and experience. Well, he definitely had experience because he had been around for a while. Ability, it depends on who you ask, I guess. He started out okay and actually was had some pretty good seasons, but he got traded a lot. And he was coming to the Islanders from the Blackhawks after playing for the Rangers and then the Leafs. And like you said, the Pat Foley rant, made it very clear how the venerable Chicago Blackhawks broadcaster felt about Karpatsev on his way out the door. My favorite part is when he's like, Alexander Karpatsev is now the New York Islanders problem.
Yes, that's so good. And he was wrong because he was only our problem for a little bit. But yeah, it was a couple of things. I remember being excited that they made a move because they were in like the thick of the race for eighth back then, which was a huge deal for Islander fans because that was basically the ceiling of a team that, like Desmond just said, was just chock full of weird Islanders. So like this team was just never going to do anything better than that. And a couple things that come right to mind when I think of the Karpatsev trade. One, I remember staying up late to watch his debut against the Sharks. He played well and thinking, all right, that's great. And then, of course, a couple of days later, you just never heard from him again. Two, they traded for him on trade deadline day. The day before trade deadline day, they traded for someone else, Steve Webb. Right. They reacquired Steve Webb the day before. And I was like, oh, wow, the band's getting back together. And I think the reason that they were looking to bolster their blue line was because they traded one of the best Islanders to ever put on the jersey. Matthias Timander was shipped out a couple weeks early. And it weakened the blue line because I think they were thinking, oh, we might, you know, we're going to give, you know, some of our kids a shot. And, you know, this is, of course, pre Chris Campoli and Bruno Gervais. So the pipeline was a little barren at that point. And it didn't work out for them. But yeah, it was quite the flurry of moves from Mad Mike between January and March. Timander out, Webb and Karpatsev in.
That was something. I had no recollection of Steve Webb playing for the Penguins. So there you go.
I mean, it's so weird that he and Matt Martin, you think of Matt Martin as the Steve Webb of this generation, and they both did these kind of funny stints away and then got we traded for them to come back. We're like, we missed this guy too much. We got to get him back. But yeah, Webb was a Penguin for who knows how many games he played for them, but then he was
As he should have. So yeah, Karpatsev's final line as an Islander: 3 games played, 0 goals, 1 assist. That's it. That's his mark on the Islanders. That's the exact least amount you could possibly do is get 1 assist.
As forgettable as that, like that era of Islanders are, it's. Looking at the post article that you had here about the trade, there's Justin Papineau name in here. Who did they acquire Steve Webb in exchange for? Elaine Nazardine,
former Devils head assistant coach or whatever.
we got Eric Goddard. The last graph of the article. Those Islanders in jeopardy of seeing their ice time slashed to make room for Yashin are fringe players such as Justin Papineau and Eric Goddard. Neither was expected to play last night. And it's just like, geez.
Neither of them are defensemen either, which is great.
This article also mentions Cliff Ronning. Yeah. Like, it's awful. it just jogs like a lot of weird, like the Karpatsev trade. It's just throwing shit at the wall. Like all of this player movement was just like Sterling said yesterday morning that Yashin would center a line with Marius Tchaikovsky and 38-year-old Cliff Ronning. And it was like,
hey, Ronning was great that season. He was
the Adrian O'Coin celebration against the Canucks where they get like a power play in overtime 4-on-3. And he just like tees up a O'Coin one timer to win it and just jumps into his arms. And it just looks like a father and son just celebrating. Like he hit the home run or something at the Little League game.
Yeah. I mean that team was hilarious because it was supposed to be like the Ronnings, the O'Coins, and you could throw like Janssen and some other like kind of quote unquote you know veteran guys in there. They were supposed to just be keeping the seat warm for you know Papineau and Mapletoft. Tommy Pettinen was up and coming.
Oh my God, Tommy Pettinen, like, Jesus.
But that's what the point was. Like this was like the team to like, we're not rebuilding. They're going to get us into the playoffs. These young guys are going to get the experience they need. And then the next season, next season will be all about Bergenheim, Mapletoft, Papineau, you know, DiPietro, obviously like the core is coming together nicely here.
Yeah,
man.
That core.
But brutal, you know what? Brutal. It was the lockout. I bet it was the lockout. And if the lockout yeah. didn't happen, you know, Justin Mapletoft, his would've number would definitely be yeah. in the rafters, definitely. Right?
Yeah, what could have been? Right. What could have been?
Slowed down all that momentum. Him, you know, they would have had a kitschy line name for him, Matias Weinhandel, and Cliff yeah. Ronning, like dad and son's line or something.
So Karpantsev's time with the Islanders, and in fact, the Islanders' time in the playoffs did not last particularly long. He didn't play any playoff games with them. And he was let to walk as a free agent, and he signed with the Panthers. And a couple of games into that season, GM Mike Keenan loaned him to a team in Russia where I guess he really felt like playing. So that stint also didn't, if there's ever a weird Panthers podcast, they're probably definitely going to do an episode on him. And yeah, that's about it. Again, he ended up staying in Russia, coaching there. And again, unfortunately passing away in the locomotive incident, but yeah, he's a real character, Karpantsev. I remember when he was a Ranger, like he was kind of a weird dude. And apparently his history of, maybe not being the most physically fit guy in the league, kind of carried around with him for a while. There's some interesting articles about because he was traded to the Blackhawks for Brian McCabe, who went on to have a pretty good time of it for the Leafs. So,
the Hawks, yeah, yeah. That part, another quote from that Pat Foley rant was he references the trade and says one of the worst deals in Blackhawk history.
Disgraced in uniform when he was a member of the Chicago Blackhawks. As he leaves Chicago, I just have one sentiment for Alexander Karpantsev. Good riddance. We are through two periods in New Jersey.
You don't like this guy. That much is clear.
It's pretty clear. But yeah, so there you go. So he's definitely, you know, he was definitely most probably didn't want to come to the Islanders. And when he got here, he didn't want to be here that long. So he wasn't. Next up on the reluctant Euro list is who, Desmond?
Richard Zednik.
Forward Richard Zednik, Slovakian. Had a really good NHL career. And also a stop with the Islanders. he played slightly more games than Karpantsev did. 10, in fact, in the regular season. Had tripled them, including 5 in the playoffs.
Iron Man.
Yes.
Iron Man. Richard Zednik.
Had 1 goal, 2 assists, 3 points in the regular season, and then zeros across the board in the playoffs. But no, he was a good player. But my favorite part about this trade is he was acquired for a second-round pick, first of all, which is like, what? I mean, okay, come on. The guy they picked is somebody named Theo Ruth, so I guess –
The Theo Ruth?
Yes, the very same. This was in February of 2007, so we moved from Mike Milbury to Garth Snow now. So that one didn't end up burning Snow. But my favorite thing is, and again, I'm going to link the article there. The article at the Islanders site says, Richard Zednik is an Islander, with an exclamation point. And I was like, really? That's the guy who gets the exclamation point? Richard Zednik? And basically like the prototypical sort of middle six forward. I guess at that time it seemed like a good idea, but you know, what about Zednik stands out from that time?
So do you know the time? I just remember thinking like just in general that season, especially at that point, like they were trending upwards. That year forever exists as a weird year because it's like they, you know, they get, mocked for the DiPietro contract that after like a soft, like maybe first couple weeks of the season, he really kicks it into gear. And then the team, after Ted Nolan jumbles the lines, like does pretty well for itself. And, I remember they got, I think Marc-Andre Bergeron, they got before Zednik. and then thinking like, oh wow, cool. Like, I know this guy, Richard.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I've heard of him.
Yeah.
After, you know, after the that 05-06 year where like we're replacing Kenny Jansen with Brad Lukowich, I'm like, it's nice to get what seems like a new player that I know. But if I recall correctly, he got hurt. He got injured a bit, like maybe either before the trade or after the trade. I could have swore he wasn't like in the daily lineup, and I could have swore it might have been for injury's sake.
I remember it being the Islanders, so they traded for him. Mm-hmm. Of course, like this was in the middle. Like Snow made so many trades that year. Yeah, Randy Robitaille was back, of course.
Oh my god!
Obviously, Ryan Smith. You know, there's the Mike York and Alexei Zhitnik trade for Freddie Meyer. So like, he was wheeling and dealing this year, and Zednik was just like a piece of it. But they traded for him, and then they started to struggle a little bit. Like, and they were, and they fell out of the playoff picture, and they had to go on that obviously that miraculous run. And I just remember him kind of being like, "Yeah, I'm kind of done. I'm gonna go home to Slovakia," and then comes home. The Islanders make the playoffs, and look who's back. And it's like, oh no, you know what? I'm kind of into this now. It's Richard Zednik. He played all five games, I think, against the Sabres in that series. He was not a part of the Dubljewicz run at all. He wasn't. I don't think he would played in any of those games, but he did play in the playoffs because he was like, I'm out. I don't feel like playing here. And maybe that's just PTSD from Karpatsev, you know, but I think that is actually what happened. Is that like, he was like, nah, I'm kind of peacing out.
I'm absolutely amazed that you remember that. Cause I have no recollection of this whatsoever. I worked for the Associated Press at the time. Like I was in the sports department. I should know all this. I had no idea that this was going on. That's crazy.
Yeah. But, I mean, I just Googled Richard Zednik returns to Islanders. And there's a hockey news article. New York Islanders forward Richard Zednik returns for playoff opener.
Yeah, and the other funny thing too about that trade of getting him was that, you know, he came from Washington, and I think most people probably remember him as a Washington Capital. But they had actually traded him to Montreal earlier. he played a bunch of years for Washington. They traded him to Montreal. He went back to Washington, I think, as a free agent, and then the Caps traded him to the Islanders. And then he too, like Karpatsev, would play a bunch of games for the Panthers. He stuck around for two seasons, but he had a horrific skate cut. I'll include the video, but it was pretty bad. I viewer discretion is advised. Let me tell you, it was pretty horrible. But he turned out okay, and he ended up playing the next season. But I don't think his 15 total games as an Islander is going to stand out in the career of Richard Zednik, you know, middle six forward.
a couple other things I remember him for. He had like a good look. He had a very that era look, you know, the kind of baggy jersey, almost like Alexei Yashin a little bit.
I was gonna say he and Smith could be like brothers on the ice, like same hair, same jersey.
Exactly. the skates were, I think he had these like kind of Randy Robitaille style silver skates that I remember, and I was like, this guy's pretty cool. Like, and he had the you know, it was all the rage back then. If you Google like image him, his jersey was like tucked into his
his
elbow pad or whatever. So like he had Zednik had a look. We just didn't get to see it all that much.
he was a handsome guy, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
He kind of had a little bit of the, again, of the time, just like his jersey. Didn't he also have like a little bit of that like mid-2000s like like Strokes type hair, garage,
very Nickelback
Renaissance hair, like switchfoot Keen type thing.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. Yeah, he was definitely of that time.
He was like a very poor man's Mary Strakowski in a way. Like, Strakowski is like just so handsome, and but like almost sickeningly handsome. Yeah. Whereas Zednik is like, if Tchaikovsky was the front man for this mid-2000 hockey player band, you know, Zednik is the guy on the guitar with like what were those bracelets with like the spikes coming out of it or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And no shirt, but the leather vest.
Yeah.
You know, that's him. He reminds me of that movie School of Rock. Like,
and Wade Dubowitz is the drummer.
It's so funny. I completely forgot, like, because like looking at this list, I was like, what was he reluctant? Like, I remember him coming to the team. I remember him playing. And especially like the Islanders forever have been a slow team. Mm-hmm. And I remember him being like one of the few like faster skaters. I remember like getting him being a thing like, oh, cool. A guy that can play with pace. That's nice. And it's just that whole thing of him coming to the team, being excited about him being on the team. Then it's starting to fall apart. Him just noping out, but then coming back for an ineffective playoff run kind of mirrors how that specific season felt as an Islander fan of like, oh, maybe this is going to be good. Oh no, this is actually going to be bad. Oh no, we are in the playoffs. Ah, well,
yeah,
for a little bit, I guess. But like, it's right because I thought he was hurt because I like that Dubljewicz game has been like replayed so many times. I've watched highlights from it a million times, and like he's not there, so I assumed he had to have been hurt because like I remember almost all the players in that game, and he was not one of them.
Yeah,
yeah. He like I'll have to try to do more digging on it, and when we do the sequel, the Zednik sequel, I'll have to find like the exact storyline from it. But yeah, I'm pretty sure like he played just a few games and was exciting, like because like you said, like he when you have Mike Sillinger and Trent Hunter out there, like it's this guy looks like he's like Connor McDavid for a little bit, like you're like, oh man, this guy is so fast.
Yeah.
He must be awesome. And of course, like with any trade deadline deal, you feel like, okay, this guy is going to be awesome, you're really excited for it, but he kind of I still love him. He's one of those guys that at the same time feels like he, because of how they acquired him at the deadline and he played in the playoffs, he feels like he played 45 games, not 10, which says a lot. You know, that's a very big compliment to you, Richard.
Yeah, there you go. And he had a long career after going back to Slovakia, played for a bunch of teams and in the World Championships. So there you go.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like now, like it's the part of the reason it's hard to like dig up the, his like news on him from the 2000s, because it shouldn't be that hard to look up Richard Zednik news, is because every time you Google his name, it's all about the injury he had, it's like, all right, can I just skip a couple pages here to the part where he bails out on the Islanders.
Yeah. I also appreciate that he finished with exactly 200 goals for his career, but he scored 31 for the Habs 1 year. So there you go. Okay. Let's move on. So those are our two true weird Islanders. Two guys, again, did not want to come here, peaced out in one way or another. And that was it. But as we know, the Islanders do have a history of getting guys who don't want to come. And then sometimes those guys like it here and they stay. And so Desmond, will you please reveal the next member of the reluctant Euros group?
So before I do it, I just want to, you want me to do it in the order that you have it on the page here? Cause that's not the chronological order of acquisition.
You don't have to do it. You could do it the other way.
Okay. Because we'll also be going up in quality that way. So next is the professor himself.
Yes.
Evgeny Nabokov.
Yes. I mean, I don't know how much more of the backstory of Nabokov we need to go into. I think everybody knows. And if Zednik is a guy who seems like he played more games for the Islanders, Nabby, and I will call him Nabby because that's what his name really should be. We're intimately involved, all of us, I think, with him. Played 123 games with the Islanders, and it seems like he didn't play that many, but it was a lot. And obviously the big highlight for him was that 2013 run where he basically emptied his entire career tank to get the Islanders into a first round playoff series with the Penguins. But like that run really erased a lot of the shenanigans that went on before he even came to the Islanders, which is why he's here in the first place, including him. He had this long career with the Sharks. He signed with the KHL. He signed a deal with the Red Wings to come back to play in the NHL. But back then you had to go through re-entry waivers. And if another team put in a claim, I don't care, it doesn't matter who you signed with, you're going to that other team. And here comes the ultimate the ultimate wild card, Garth Snow, to come in and snatch a goaltender with a little bit left in the tank. And Nabokov was not happy about it. he didn't want to play for the Islanders. He signed to play in Detroit and not here. He wanted to play for a good team and not the Islanders. And this kicked off a whole thing that Dom at the time very conveniently summarized in a cool article that I'll link to. I mean, I didn't think he was ever coming. Like, there was no way I thought he would ever show up. And when he did, I remember being like, oh man, this is not going to end well. I don't know what happened. And then like a year later, I would give my life for this guy. Like, he just, you know, he endeared himself so much. So, I mean, Desmond, what do you remember about that time period? I mean, how much of the shenanigans do you remember versus the actual run of play for Nabokov?
I remember the run of play more than the shenanigans. Like right now, just like, look, because I'm trying to remember which year it was. Because to your point of like, it seems like he was on the team longer, but like, so I see that the waiver claim was in 2011, mm-hmm. which is like one of many cursed seasons. That was the, I believe that was the Matt Molson separates Mark Streit's shoulder in the preseason exhibition game. The one hit that guy ever threw in his Islander career. And like Tanks, what you thought was going to be like a Mark Streit, James Wisniewski power play, like shooting gallery. So I forgot the shenanigans. Never thought he was going to join the team. Yeah. Like ever. Did he not join the team until the 2011-12 season?
Yeah, because that was they had the lockout, right? Or no, yeah. They had the half season lockout, basically. No, he did. Play, yeah.
No, I think you're right. Like, so what happened was he didn't end up playing for them that season, but basically the Islanders and him came to an agreement, I think, because they could toll his contract. I remember hearing the term toll a contract for the first time in my life. And they were like, well, okay, if he doesn't play for us now, we'll just toll his contract for 2011-12. So he had no choice if he wanted to play in the NHL. Like, he had to play for the Islanders. So he signed that extension, played for them in 2011-12, was their number one goalie, I think, for most of that season. Was pretty good. And I remember, like you said, like that season had some promise to it until the cursed preseason. And the thing about Nabokov, never thought he was coming, but mostly because I just couldn't picture it.
Right.
I'm like, this guy, like he's a Sharks legend. Like at this point, like Sharks best run of success in their relatively short history to that point. And it was Nabokov, like Vezina, Calder trophy kind of guy. I think he won the Calder, and then he was always in the Vezina conversation.
Yeah.
Was playing like 72 games a season for them. Like he was
second in the Vezina, behind Marty Brodeur in 2008.
He played 77 games in 2007, 2008, 77. And wow. I just remember him. He was a Shark. He was a Shark legend. And did it because he was a Shark. Like, I just knew him as he's Evgeny Nabokov, goaltender for the Sharks. Good goaltender, like kind of like a Mika Kiprasov kind of guy, kind of like, you know, just someone who you just will always, Marty Turco, like he is this team's goalie for this, you know, section of hockey history. So like, I just couldn't picture it. And in a weird way, it's funny that Detroit claimed him on waivers and the Islanders took him, because it reminds me a little bit of Osgood, whereas like you can't picture Chris Osgood as an Islander, like in that time. Like, you're just like, this guy is he's a Red Wing. He played in Red Wings pads for the Islanders. That's how much of a Red Wing he was.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, I was half expecting Nabokov to do the same thing. But he became an Islander really quickly. Yeah. Like he just, because he was like a Shark, like you don't look too much into his like reputation. Is he, you know, you didn't know he was like this whimsical, cute little Russian guy. And then he comes over here, and within like 2 weeks, everyone's just raving about him. And it's like, this guy is just the nicest guy. He's incredibly like intelligent. He's thoughtful. He like puts good context on a lot of things. He was just perfect for that team in that room. And he was like the perfect antidote to Rick DiPietro at the time, because this was obviously when, you know, Rick's career was just going up in flames. So like he was for a young team that needed some stability. You know, I think stability is the last thing you'll ever get from even good Rick DiPietro, right? Like he's just not that kind of goalie. He was perfect for them. And I think like to this day, if you asked Nabokov, like if he was on the show, I think he would probably be describing his Islander career in a similar sense that we would. Like, yeah, no, I could never, I probably didn't even know, he probably didn't know the Islanders existed.
Right.
You know, for a long time. And then he's like, well, wait, we're going to play another New York. What's this team? Like this, right. Oh, this is an Islander, right? Like, and then he fell in love with it. I love him. I just love the guy.
I think the thing that endeared him the most was his interactions with Stan Fischler, of course, post game. They had a real fun, you know, relationship with the two of them. But then also, like, he really ingratiated himself in the locker room. And I remember him after he left the Islanders and signed with Tampa Bay for a very short stint. He said that the Islanders locker room was like the tightest he'd ever seen. These guys like brothers, he said. And I guess he was definitely a big part of that.
Yeah, I was interning with Stan for that shortened season, 2013.
Oh, so
my task for him after every game was, you know, once the game was coming to an end, to go downstairs and sit next to Nabokov just to make sure Stan could basically keep his seat warm. So Stan could be the first one to ask him a question. So I'd go down there and I'd sit like in the Islanders locker room at the Coliseum, which is, it was like Long Island living room. You almost expected everyone to have like plastic plates eating penny a la vodka off of like these plates. Right. Because it was so cramped and everyone's just like sitting, and you got like the six media members, the one Islander beat writer, Stan, me, and then three people from out of town. I would sit next to him and he just like kind of just like, you know, shoot the shit. And he would always say, what song does he have for me today? Because Stan would sit next to him and say, do you know what today's song was? And he's like, I don't know. And I remember the one when they clinched the playoffs that season was Happy Days Are Here Again. And so he looks at Stan. He's like, oh, but I'm sure you're going to tell me. And he goes, Happy Days Are Here Again. Do you want me to sing it to you? And he goes, after, or something like that. It was great.
Their dynamic was so great. Like it reminds me of one of my favorite dynamics, like in maybe all of like comedy in my lifetime, which is it had a bit of a Conan O'Brien, Max Weinberg to it, with the OG Conan O'Brien show, where the bit was that they did not have chemistry, or they did not like know what the other person's vibe was at all. And there was like such a, it started there, and then they eventually like seemingly just built a genuine rapport with each other. And it was just, man, it was so fun. It was also like, it was nice. You know, you said stabilizing before, like, I think like his stats for the Islanders were nothing to write home about, but they were good enough. And in a way, like, they just needed good enough. They didn't need another season of Rick DiPietro, Marty Biron, Dwayne Rollison, Nathan Lawson, Jan Denny, rotation, Mikko Koskinen, Anders Nilsson. Like we didn't need to keep rotating through. We needed stability, and it was nice to have like that veteran presence, a good enough pro goalie that could be in the locker room for Tavares to help Streit with like kind of being a vet that isn't Zenon Konopka, you know, like to have some measure of like dignifiable clout in the locker room. He got them there. And I mean, like, you know, he played, let me look at that stat line again. Cause I feel like he played almost the entire lockout.
Yeah. Basically.
Like, because that's what kind of did them in, was he, like Dan said, he emptied the tank, and people always focus on how poor he played against the Penguins in that series. But it was because I think they played 48 games that year. So, 40, and I want to say he probably played 35 to 40 of them.
41 games played, and all of those are starts too. And that's all because the backup was the once and never goalie of the future, Kevin Poulin, who could not hold on to his stick or make the first save of a game.
Yeah.
Like
Nabokov was spectacular for a lot of those games. And was it that year where they won in Philly for the first time in like 40 years or something like that?
I think that's what started their run. I'm pretty, like, if I'm remembering correctly. And he saved,
it was
like
a 1-0 win. And Josh Bailey, I remember, had the one goal. And it was like, that's how this streak came to an end.
Our friend. That's friend right. of the pod, that's right. Josh Bailey.
What a combo. Nabokov and Bailey.
And I think that was the season, too, when Bailey and Oposo kind of clicked. Like, there was just this moment. I think it was a game against the Maple Leafs where like they just looked amazing on a shift. And I'm like, holy hell. Like,
well,
these guys
Oposo
are here.
Turned that whole series around by punching Matt Niskanen in the face several times. So I'll never forget that.
Oh, right. Yeah. So good.
Right. Yeah, I was there. I was in Pittsburgh for that. I was, and I do have one more quick Nabokov anecdote from Stan, which was the Islanders were playing the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it was one of my first games working, and I was trying to like get the ropes, and I was just kind of hanging out in like that box office lobby, and I just see this really tall Swedish guy, and I'm like, oh, that's Anders Lindbäck. So he's like looking around. I'm like, hey man, you need help? He's like, yeah, where are the locker rooms at this place? So I was like, oh, I'll show you. I'll walk you to the visitor's locker room. And we're just talking. He's like, asking me what I do or whatever. And he's like, do you know who's in goal for the Islanders? And I said, it's Evgeny Nabokov. He goes, I love that guy. Like, I just love the way he plays. He's like, he's never out of a play. He's like, oh, he's, even when you think he's out of a play, he finds a way to get back into it, like to make the save. And he like, kind of, him and I were just like talking back and forth about Nabokov. And I was like, yeah, you know, I just can't even believe he's an Islander. And then Lindbäck was like, oh, why? And I'm like, oh, we don't need to get, like, I just was like, oh no, there's the visitor's locker room. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't, this is, you're getting, well, I'll tell you on a podcast episode 12 years from now.
That playoff, his playoff performance was not good, but again, it was like he played way more than he should have. I also think about, and I'd love to just do weird Isles seasons or just Isles seasons in review, because I'd love to talk about that team. I remember like after that playoff, you know, series, everyone's like, all right, we're glad we made the playoffs. Like Tavares looked awesome. That was where like, that was Oposo kind of coming into his own, Bailey coming into his own, a lot of like the Hamonic, a lot of the guys that we thought were going to be like the Isles that were going to, you know, win the cup in our time, you know? But we were like, okay, but we got to replace the goalie. And then there were, I remember like, oh, maybe we'll get Mike Smith. Maybe we'll get that spry Mike Smith. But then like nothing, they don't get anybody. And then we end up with Nabokov, and that 13-14
season. Thomas
Vanek
season. That's it's a disaster.
Weird year, bad year. He was very clear. Nabokov was clearly done. And I'll just always remember like the, yeah, this season's cooked moment of like the Andrew McDonald collision against the I think it was against the Red Wings or I forgot who it was against, but like there was like a race to the puck, like race to a loose puck. So like the Red Wings are running to it. Nabokov's trying to come out to it. McDonald is coming back to it too. And like the player gets the stick on the puck. McDonald and Nabokov like fly into each other.
Yeah.
And like McDonald does some sort of like ragdoll physics in a video game, just like somersault over Nabokov, and the puck just like slowly goes into the net. And I'm like, yeah, this season's cooked in December. Tough feelings.
I remember that really well. And I'm pretty sure a couple weeks left in that season was when Nabokov was doing his, you know, the Islanders were doing warmups, and there's like a very, you know, Islander viral famous clip of him when he stepped on a puck and he fell face flat, and he started doing a snow angel like as he was sliding while the rest of the team kept warming up around him.
I remember that. For more on that season, check out Weird Islanders podcast on Thomas Vanek, starring guest Jenny Berman. That was a really good one. And you can relive every moment of that torturous season once again. But as Desmond said before, there was another guy who the Islanders acquired after Nabokov, who also didn't want to come over and kind of fought his way in different ways until finally making it over somehow and became another sort of cult hero. And so Desmond, who would that guy be?
Actually the best of this squad and definitely I would say the most handsome, Lubomir Vyshnovsky.
The Silver Fox himself, Lubomir Vyshnovsky. Again, 112 games played with the Islanders. You'd think it would have been more, but no, it was just a little bit less than Nabokov, and 11 goals, 34 assists, 45 points, and then in the playoffs, just 4 assists. I thought he was scored a playoff goal, but I guess not in 10 games. And this is another one. Like, he became so popular. I had his T-shirt. I had a Lubomir Vyshnovsky Islanders T-shirt because I had to, because this guy was the best. He did play with Streit, right? Like,
they played on the power play together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so having the two of them together was like my dream come true. And then beautiful. That was it. They were done.
you got to see it.
Streit wrists one that's deflected off the skate of Gleason and comes back to Streit. Vyshnovsky fires, scores! The Islander power play has its first four-goal game since February of 2008, almost 5 years to the day at Toronto. And it is now Carolina 5, the Islanders 4.
Well, I'm not sure if Matt Molson gets a part of this, but again, the Islanders control the puck, straight over to Vyshnovsky. Watch Matt Molson here in the front of your net. I think it goes off his left leg past Ward. Watch Molson as he's in front. Seems to go off his left leg there, Holly, but the Islanders shot the puck, and that's the most important thing. Strike to Vyshnovsky, who's got that quick release.
Two beautiful men, just two handsome lads playing just beautiful hockey together. Right. It was great.
Smooth as hell. Yeah.
Smooth as hell.
And but prior to that, this story is even more complicated than the Nabokov one, because they picked him up on waivers, they had to toll his contract, got him to come. Vyshnovsky had a whole thing, and this was one of those situations where I kind of feel a little bit bad for reporters, because they have to all of a sudden become lawyers too, and they have to like sort of parse the legalese of all these obscure contracts and all the little fine print that players have agents for, because they don't want to deal with this kind of stuff. And Vyshnovsky had been traded from the Oilers to the Ducks, even though he had a no trade clause, and then somehow his no trade clause hadn't kicked in, I guess, and so the Ducks traded him to the Islanders. But he was like, no, I have a no trade clause. And it was a whole big thing. And again, like, and then he went back to Slovakia because his son was ill. And that was a twist that nobody really saw coming. He needed surgery, I guess, or something. And we were like, well, he's never going to come. I mean, at first it was like, what the hell's wrong with this guy? And then it was like, oh, okay. Well, in that case, I mean, maybe he's rather better off staying there. But then all of a sudden he just shows up and it's like, what the hell? And how did he get here? And again, like we joke about not end up getting Nabokov, not knowing who the Islanders were playing for the Sharks all those years. I got to admit, I had no idea how good this guy was when he played for the Kings, Oilers, and Ducks all those years. And when he showed up immediately, I was like, I love this guy. This guy's great. I want this guy on my team forever now.
And he had the similar disposition to Nabokov too, which was it's that year, once again, like it was in the locker room and he was just hilarious in the locker room. Mm. Not joking wise, just like watching him like he had like very funny quirks to him. Like I remember there was just this gigantic bucket of double bubble gum in the locker room, and every game I would go into it would just always be by Vyshnovsky's stall, and then after the game he would just like be picking through it like as if he was trying to find like the right piece of bubble gum or something. And I was just, I love this guy. But we got to start this from my favorite part of the saga is, so yeah, the Islanders, you know, they trade for him at the draft. Then it was the lockout.
Yes.
So right. Everyone forgets about hockey for a long time. And then they were like, okay, like this guy's got to come to camp in January when the camp started. Like we need him to report or else we're going to suspend him, whatever. And the KHL said like, oh yeah, this was also during like those frosty times between the KHL and NHL where it's like they had those like agreements where it's like you can't sign any of our players. We can't sign your players unless it's agreed to. But they they made sure that each league didn't ever break the rule because they didn't want to start, you know, a cold war again, like we saw when Malkin tried to come over. And so the KHL suspended him. And then there's a picture, and it's still on Twitter, if you just Twitter search Vyshnovsky bus, where the Islanders are like, yeah, no, he's coming to camp. He'll be here for camp. That's our expectation. And then some like Slovakian reporters like, oh no, he's on the team bus for HC Slavin Bratislava. And then he put a picture, and there's Vyshnovsky on the bus in the middle of the aisle, like talking to one of his teammates. And so like everyone's like, what the hell? Like, are you sure? Because he's supposed to be coming. Eventually, you know, he did. He had to sort the thing out with his son. And came over, and like Nabokov, the difference between him and Nabokov is Vyshnovsky. I think his first game was against the Sabres, and from the second he stepped on the ice, he like immediately became one of the Islanders' best players. Like that season, he was probably their third best player behind Tavares and Oposo. Like he was incredible that year. Completely turned their power play around. Incredible puck mover, and he stuck around and had two playoff seasons with the Islanders, and which is incredible. Like for they're very few, they're very
which
few
is
people.
Rarefied air.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Sure.
You know, it's funny. The draft party announcement of the trade was like a really funny video to revisit. One, I was there and it was like, oh, and like, you see the stat line, like, oh wait, that's a good player actually. and I think, and that's what, like 2 years removed from Garth, getting, James Wisniewski. And it's like, huh, maybe Garth is like weirdly good at finding just weird, you know, trade targets that no one else saw or whatever. But another funny part of the video is like they make the trade, you know, you hear the like decent, you know, cheer. And then the Islanders, I guess, had the next pick, which ended up being the Griffin Reinhardt pick. And I vaguely remember like being at that draft party and thinking like, all right, cool. We got this guy. We got the puck, another puck moving defenseman, but we also got this rugged stay at home guy that's going to be our Chris Pronger. And oops. It's like, one of those things panned out.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You know, it panned out just in a different way. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Vyshnovsky. Yeah. I mean, making the playoffs twice with the Islanders in that era was pretty rare. But I'm also pretty sure he's the only Islander to ever have tried to void his trade to the Islanders and then also sign an extension with it.
Right.
Like that's what I kind of, again, I totally forgot about that. But there's an article at Lighthouse Hockey about him signing a 2-year extension. And it was pretty wild. And like, again, he became like a member of the locker room. That was back when the Islanders had that awesome, like David Putty style leather jacket that they gave out after the game. and they gave it to him, and Kyle Oposo called him the Silver Fox. And I mean, it was just such a great, like fun group. Obviously Franz Nielsen was in there. And that was also actually, I meant to mention before, like another guy who came alive in that playoff series with the Penguins was Casey Cizikas. That was like his first real kind of like, wow, this guy's pretty good, and he's actually a very useful fourth line player. Who could have seen that coming? But of course, Vyshnovsky's career. Now he didn't play a ton of games. In fact, he only played with the Islanders for 35 games in the lockout year, 24 the year after, and 53 the year after that. I mean, he just was hurt a lot, which is unfortunate. I mean, he was 36 when he came over. So he was 38
and he was
last year. And he was small, right?
He was quick. Yeah. So he was like, if he was getting hit, like he was getting hit, unfortunately.
Right. And he didn't shy away from that kind of stuff. And that's where I'm getting to. Unfortunately, with his last shift with the Islanders was in the playoffs that year in 14-15 against the Capitals. And we'll always remember that Tom Wilson hit him and he got concussion. And that was the end of that. And it spurred Thomas Hickey, of all people, to enact revenge upon Tom Wilson. And that got Washington is the only building, I think, in the NHL to ever have booed Thomas Hickey, which is unfathomable when you think about it. But yeah, just I still have the shirt And when I wear it, I just remember that stupid smile. And again, the whole saga and just getting them and just being like, man, this guy is awesome. And I had friends who were Kings fans and at the time and Ducks fans saying, oh man, he's the best. And I was like, yeah, everybody says that about their players, but no, he really was.
Yeah. That playoff series too, because so much attention is focused on that hit.
Hmm.
He had an amazing game one.
Yeah.
And he took a lap of honor. He was named second star and he went like full Euro on us. And,
yes.
And there was a Tavares overtime winner with like 60 seconds into overtime.
Yeah.
And Vyznoski's named second star. And obviously Tavares won the game. He's first star. And as they're announcing Tavares, Vyznoski is still circling the crowd, like giving the clap to the, you know, like you'd see after a soccer game to every inch of the Coliseum. He was soaking it up. Which is almost like prescient that this is coming to an end. And I'm sure he didn't think it was coming like that way. But that him and Hickey together.
Right.
Like
they were great.
Totally interesting defense pair that worked out perfectly. Like neither guy over 6 feet, similar skill sets in terms of, you know, Hickey was much more of like a good defensive, but like slick puck mover, and then Vyznoski was more of like the gambler of the pair. And then, that hit, like I remember exactly where I was with that hit and that playoff series. Like the Islanders ended up going to seven with the Capitals in a series where they were probably the better team. And if it wasn't for Vyznoski and a bunch of other defensemen go, I mean, the game five, six and seven, like defense pairings were just an absolute mess. Like Matt Donovan, Reinhardt, you know, young Scott Mayfield playing like rookie.
Right.
It was so disheartening that team could have went so much further. And, but
I love that 14-15 team still to me, I think is like the most talented in terms of Islander teams I've watched overall talent level, in comparison to like, I guess where they ranked in the league at the time of season. Like, I think that's probably the most talented, like 1-23 roster that the Islanders have had in my time of watching since 96. And that Hickey Vyznoski pairing is like one of the things I think about with like how cool that season was, where like that was their third pair. And like when you think of like third D pairs, it's usually like a power play specialist and a penalty kill specialist. It's a big guy, little guy thing. It's
Andy Green and somebody else.
It's not two little guys that like both move the puck, but like that was one of the that was probably the, I think, most exciting style of play Islanders, because the Doug Weight style was more offensive, but negative defensively. Like they couldn't have played less defense if they tried.
Yeah.
Whereas like that was just, I remember the Islanders felt like they were on the attack all that season, constantly like four man rushes, like D joining the rush. And those two guys just were so fun.
Definitely one of the more fun Islanders teams to watch over the last, however many years.
They had checking lines. Like that was the thing. Like they just, it was almost as if like they were a precursor to 20, you know, to Trotz era guys, where it's like, I think by accident, Capuano just ended up putting everybody in like the right spot. Like, cause you had a legitimate, you know, scoring line with, you know, Tavares at the forefront. Then you had the checking line with like Franz and pivoting. And then you had the Cizikas, like Colin McDonald kind of thing going, where the identity line before it was the identity line going. And, that team, like I, one other thing about that season I'll never forget, and it's Vyznoski related, was, you know, it was of course the first last season at the Coliseum, and I believe they were playing the Blackhawks in a game, and they were down. It was late, maybe a minute left, and he scored a goal from the point, and it was like I was sitting like right behind the goal that it went in, so I go in, celebrate, and my seat just disintegrated below me, like completely came apart. Like the bottom, like the seat part of the seat just fell to the ground, crashed to the ground, every like bolts everywhere. It was nuts. I have a picture of it that I put on Twitter once. And I remember cause I gave, Katie Baker from Grantland a tour of the Coliseum that year. Cause I met her through FrancescaCon, and I told her that story, and I was like, you need, to talk to this guy. And she's like, who? And I'm like, you got to talk to Lubomir Vyšnjavski. He's just the coolest guy ever. Like, he won't factor into your story at all, but you got to talk to him. And and I don't know if she ever did, but because she came for an Islander Ranger game, and I told her a story about, yeah, my seat disintegrating, and tried to get her to maybe a spinoff feature on Lubo.
That's funny.
That was a great game. That was the game. I'm pretty sure actually it was a game winner, and I, cause it was like late in the game, and that was a game where it was like maybe November. It always takes you a while to warm up to believing that an Islander season is actually going to be good. And it usually takes a couple wins. And I feel like that win was the game. Cause they had them like one tied at like 1-1 for like most of the game. And then you're like, all right, you're waiting. You're kind of waiting, like, you know, okay, when's the Patrick Kane or Marian Hossa like end-to-end move going to happen here? But then Lubo just like rips one top shelf. Smooth. Ugh, he was so smooth.
So smooth.
Yeah.
Beautiful blue eyes on him too. Like,
yes. And a great Islander. And again, you know, it felt like he should have been an Islander for more than just a measly 112 games, which is more than most Weird Islanders get, but wasn't enough.
I think Vyšnjavski, if all every Islander fan was in UBS Arena and the Islanders handed out one of those like survey cards and they said, all right, you have five lines, your favorite Islander, you know, least favorite Islander, whatever. And then one of the questions was like, the Islander that like you love, that you think you love so much that you think doesn't, maybe other people don't love as much as you do. And I think everyone on that line would probably write Lubo Vyšnjavski, and they'd be surprised that like he was just in that Franz Nielsen kind of circle in the Venn diagram where he was just universally beloved on the team, despite only playing 90 total games for the team, which is, you know, but that's why this podcast is because like those guys for this weird part of the Islanders history, like, that's all we had. We had Lubomir Vyšnjavskis and Mike Sillinger's because, you know, we didn't have anybody else because the guys before them were not very good.
No.
Lubo's time in closing should have been longer, but I think we can take some solace. I crunched the numbers here. We got more than 37 Alex Karpatsev's worth of Vyšnjavski. So, you know, take some solace in that.
Yeah. Yes. That's definitely a good way to look at it. Our last guy to close this up, we won't talk about too much because he ain't ever played for the Islanders, but he was, you know, in a lot of ways, maybe the most weird Islander ever, and definitely the most reluctant of all these heroes. And Desmond, will you finally reveal our final guy?
He was the only successfully reluctant Islander of the list, Christian Ehrhoff.
Yes, defenseman Christian Ehrhoff was acquired from San Jose, I want to say, for a fourth round pick by Garth Snow, because he was, you know, still pretty good, but he was going to be an unrestricted free agent. And we discovered like the idea of the window where you can acquire a guy's rights and have time to negotiate and maybe sign him to a contract before he becomes a UFA. Christian Ehrhoff, he didn't want to hear any of that shit. And he just, within about a week and a half, the Islanders had traded him to Buffalo for another fourth round pick. So it was a big wash all the way around. And he signed a 10-year contract with the Sabres that ended up getting bought out. And it was a huge disaster. So in a way, the Islanders, both he avoided playing for the Islanders and the Islanders avoided paying him for way too long for way too much money. That whole talk about that guy's only shenanigans. He's all shenanigans. There's nothing left other than to remember him. But I don't know. That was a huge deal at the time. I felt like that took up a lot of mental space in my brain for way too long, and then it just ended immediately. Desmond, what do you remember about the saga of Ehrhoff?
Well, I remember them trading for him, and then they're just instantly being doubt that he was ever going to play with the team. And it's like, what's funny too is like looking at when this happened. So that this happened, this trade happened in summer 2011. So it's the summer between the Wisniewski deal, which happened around the same time, and the end of Vyšnjavski deal. Yeah. So this was Garth's like, you know, one time to go shopping. Right. It's like find some defensemen and make a trade for him.
I was wrong before. He actually came from Vancouver. I was wrong. He had played for San Jose before that. But yeah, that was his time to go shopping because he needed every advantage he could get. And it did not work at all. What's funny is that a couple of years later, he did the same thing with Yaroslav Halak. And by God, he did actually stay. So in a way, he was kind of right, but picked the wrong guy, basically.
And there's two things that are related here with Dan Boyle and Ehrhoff, because the Islanders had tried to do it with Boyle.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Wow.
So when Boyle refused his like first game with the Rangers, I remember booing him like every time he touched the puck, and people were actually doing it. And then I remember when Ehrhoff played his first game with the Sabres, or the first game I saw him play with the Sabres against the Islanders, people booed him. Like, I was like, this is amazing that people, like, I'm not the only one here that like feels burned. But yeah, I mean, just the type of guy that like would have made perfect sense for this era for the Islanders, right, to have Christian Ehrhoff. Honestly, Boyle would have too. Like, yeah. But you can now make a team of guys who the Islanders dodged a bullet with. I mean, Smith in that contract that he signed with the Avalanche, Drury, Gomez, when they were really in on both of those guys, that those contracts didn't really pay off all that much for the Rangers. Ehrhoff for sure. There's gotta be a couple other guys where like, it's like, oh, thank God. That never happened. I mean,
I can think of one guy who's not in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's hope that one, yeah, you know, we'll revisit that one in 3 years. And the series finale of Weird Islanders when we do his.
Oh, my God. But, wow, that would be great.
Well, just one thing has to just not happen for that to happen. So,
yeah, basically.
But, like, yeah, you think about, like, those contracts. I mean, you could of course, we hold these guys in much higher regard. But, like, you know, like Nielsen and Oposo, of course. Yeah, like, talk about dodging a bullet. Ehrhoff was really good. And he was a player who was like, damn, this guy's just way too good to be an Islander for his whole career. He's like the type of guy who's like, I wish the Islanders could have someone like Christian Ehrhoff. And then he's like, no, it's just, that will never happen. Trust me.
I didn't realize he played for so many teams after the Sabres. He went to the Penguins, he went to the Kings, and he played for Chicago. I had no idea. I thought he just took off and that was the end. Went back to Germany and that was the end of that. But I guess not. So, but yeah, like you said, Desmond, he's the one man to escape the Islanders' clutches and successfully just say, nah, I'm not playing for these guys. Everybody else had to play. Even Karpatsev played 3 games before it was over. Like even Kirk Muller put in a little bit of time before he was launched into the sun. But Ehrhoff was like, I'm putting my foot down. It ain't happening. And you got to get me out of here. And he ended up playing for the Buffalo. So, you know, that's what you get, man.
Yeah. It makes you appreciate Vishnovsky that much more, you know? It's kind of nice of the, like, I would say ever since that era, like, of the Islanders, it's like, even when things have been not great, they haven't been as horrendous. Whereas, like, you know, Ehrhoff, like, not coming to, like Mike said, you know, oh, this guy's good. He's not going to be on the Islanders. And, like, that was just, like, generally how it felt to be, like, a fan. Like, oh, yeah, no, this good player will not play. You're going to be watching Mark Eaton as your number two defenseman next year. And that's that. Man, what a it's a nice reminder of as bad as things can feel now. How did we live through that?
Yeah, we haven't had a player turn down the Islanders in quite a while after they traded for him. So we're on a good streak here.
Yeah, there you go. I was wrong, by the way, before. I thought they bought out Ehrhoff, but he retired and they still owed him money, the Sabres did. So hopefully they're done paying that up. Oh, no, sorry. He's going to be cashing checks through 27-28.
Ooh, so, nice. There you go. Good for him.
Yeah, yeah. So why wouldn't he retire, basically? So there you go. Great job, Buffalo. Well, this has been a great run. Desmond, I'm really glad you picked this one because these guys were all great. And I don't know what made me kind of put that group together, but I'm really glad we did because this was a ton of fun. So tell everybody where they can find you and your podcast.
So we're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I'm not sure we're on anywhere else. Maybe SoundCloud. but yeah, it's Through the Island. On Twitter, it's at TT Island Podcast. I have a burner account at Goldmember182. I sing in a band called Career Day. You can follow us at Career Day NY. But yeah, check us out. We are going to be doing one more podcast to close out the season. Mike and I are going to be doing exit interviews of each other, each other's performance for the season. And then we're doing an off season pod because we like to talk a lot of art and entertainment and current events and stuff. So we're going to be doing Zero Thoughts, the podcast this off season, where it's going to be even more structureless and at the whim of whatever I am drinking and thinking and Mike just living with it.
We appreciate that. And do me a favor, make sure you bring up at least once per episode the 1982 Saskatoon Blades, if you're going to.
1982 Saskatoon Blades. We'll look into that.
Yeah. So that sounds great. So yeah, everybody check out Through the Island. Again, it's a lot of fun. You know, again, it's a different dynamic than Mike and I have, but that's what makes it great. It's you guys really kind of go at it, and
it's become a podcast that's about, it's kind of become about the podcast itself at this point and more about a podcast about watching the Islanders rather than analyzing them.
Right. Which works for us. I mean, I always say, we have absolutely no idea what we're talking about. And we've done 202 episodes of not knowing anything of what we're talking about.
That's so, an inspiration because Mike and I are trying to not improve. We're trying to see how much we can not get better.
There you go. That sounds like a plan to me. Mike, big day for you. Everton not going to get relegated. So congratulations.
Yeah. I can't believe it's over in a weird way, but yeah. Still kind of digesting that. I'm still in full like Leafs mode where I'm just like gorging myself on every bit of Leafs. I'm at the very end too, which is getting kind of bad because like now I'm like dumpster diving. I'm into like podcasts with like the listenerships of this and our podcast, like Through the Island or Islanders Anxiety. Like I'm finding like fringe Leafs podcasts to listen to at this point. So if you have any suggestions, please send them my way because I'm not done. I'm barely done scratching the surface of, I've kind of become an expert on their cap situation. It really took over my life. But because I was worried about it for so long, then I've decided that I should celebrate it for as long as I was worried about it. That's what I'm doing. And, I'm not done.
All right. Look forward to your analysis on Matthew Nice.
The Leafs really hit a home run on this guy who doesn't want to play for them.
reluctant Maple Leafs.
Yeah. Reluctant Maple
you gotta
Leafs.
Look for that.
That's the next podcast for us. And where can everybody find you on Twitter to send you that kind of stuff?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
So follow Mike at the Big Lebowski. Listen to Through the Island podcast. Desmond, this has been a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed yourself. This has been great.
It's nice getting to be alongside competent podcasters.
Wow, it's crazy now.
It makes me, I might have to make some decisions about the future of my podcast just because, you know, how many years can I toil away with what I got on my wing?
Toiling away.
You're going to be unleashed.
Unleashed,
yeah. We got to see.
Somehow unleash yourself. Well, we were unleashed here for an hour and 15 minutes or so, and it has been a blast. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back again, actually, probably within the next couple of days with another Weird Islanders podcast, and if not, an Islanders Anxiety. And until you hear from us again, keep the Islanders weird. We'll talk to you later. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.